This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. BFM's Carla Sapps for Newman was at the Leadership Energy Summit Asia, which was held earlier this month here in Kuala Lumpur. And she caught up there with one of the speakers at the summit, Indian philanthropist Anu Aga, the former executive chairperson of the multi-million dollar Thermax Group. Anu now devotes most of her time to social work, focusing on corporate governance, corporate social responsibility, women's rights, and education. Carla finds out more about the initiatives that Anu is involved with while discussing her philosophies on life.
So Anu, the death of your husband Rohinton in 1996 thrust you in a chairperson's role of Thermax, an engineering company that was begun by your father. You were a director of human resources at the time. So you said recently at a conference that when you became executive chair, you hated finance. So how did you overcome your own sense of feeling small and ashamed?
I wasn't ashamed, but small and inadequate. And I kept devaluing myself, saying the only reason why the board has selected me because the family owns 62%. So I was not in touch with my strength and kept comparing myself with my charismatic husband and feeling smaller and smaller. Till I went for my meditation program, the Buddhist meditation, Vipassana, and realized all of us have something to offer. It may not be what my husband had to offer, it's different. But why should I only try and imitate my husband? I have to be myself.
So you also talked about developing yourself as a leader, as someone who had never led before in that capacity. So how did you develop yourself as a leader?
By first investing in myself. When you can invest in yourself and be authentic and tap into your inner resource of inner power, I think many things open up which you are never aware of.
And you mentioned in your speech recently, just as you were finding your feet as the head of Thermax, you suffered another loss. The death of your 25-year-old son, Kurush, in a road accident. You lost many of those close to you in a short amount of time, just 2 years. You said the pain you experienced when your husband died was insignificant compared to that of your son. Yet you say suffering is optional. Can you talk about what you meant by that, please?
The main thing is, all of us think that once we come on this earth, we're going to live here forever. For ourselves and our family and loved ones. And we never accept that all of us are going to die. We make up rules that young shouldn't die. And if a young person dies, we're angry with God. That's not fair. But who made up this rule? We made up. Anyone can die any minute while you're taking this interview. The ceiling can collapse and you both of us can die. So once you accept death, you accept, which I didn't. I was paranoid about it. I hated to talk about anything unpleasant. But today I realize that we have to face up that each of us is going to die. And that releases a lot of energy. And you feel empowered. You feel you have the strength to face anything. After death, turning around a company or not knowing finance is not an issue.
You talked about the experience was different when it was your son and not your husband. Can you explain a little bit about why that was?
Every experience is different. I miss my husband terribly, but he was a heart patient. He was 60 years old and he had a sword hanging over him. So though you never really anticipate anyone's death, I knew someday it would happen. But with my son, he was 25. He had come back from abroad. He had just started working in our company. And suddenly, one day to say he had died was a trauma, very difficult. And yet, I say that you have to go through a lot of pain. Physical, I couldn't sleep, I couldn't eat, I couldn't think clearly. But I don't have to continue to suffer for years and years by asking, why did this happen to me? Suffering is when you feel very sorry for yourself and when you keep saying, why did this happen? Why has no answer? Why am I invited here and I'm healthy? What is the answer? Why has for positive things and negative things no answer? Just accept each day. We are willing to accept the positives, but not the negatives.
I understand it was also your son who urged you to spend more time and money on social causes, such as Teach for India. So just to give a little bit of background on the Teach for India website, it states that in India today, 4% of children never start school, 58% don't complete primary school, and 90% don't complete high school. Is this why you became involved? Is that a way of carrying on your son's legacy?
No, that's not the truth. My son wanted to give substantial amount of our personal income for social causes, and I was looking for a credible NGO, and I came across an amazing lady called Shaheen, who had started an NGO called Akanksha. My son wasn't alive when Teach for India was born, but I got involved in Akanksha. And it's this NGO and working with this lady, I came to know about the educational scenario and got very interested in this cause.
So why this one? There's some would say there's so many issues in India. So why this one?
See, there's malnourishment, and without proper nourishment, a child has a stunted growth. So there's lack of jobs, there's female feticide, all kinds of problems. But when I joined Shaheen and Akanksha, I liked this NGO. And it's very important you get involved with people whose work you respect and you enjoy. And I was on the board. I liked the board members. And I got to know more about education and I realized it's a very worthy cause. There are thousands of causes, but you have to focus on one or two. Otherwise, you are spread too thin.
You talked in your speech recently about corporates who volunteer for Teach for India, but often don't want to go back to the corporate world afterwards. So what are they missing in corporate life that they find in teaching the underserved?
I think a meaning and purpose in life. The corporate world is good to make money, to fan your ego and have a status that you got a bigger position and a bigger office. But I think it doesn't satisfy your soul. You need something more than just the status of life. So I think NGOs like Teach for India answer that for you.
You also talk in terms of speaking out as a corporate about the massacre of Muslims in Gujarat. Can you talk about why you were perhaps one of the few in India to do so?
One thing, as I said, there is a business organization called Confederation of Indian Industry, and I was the chairperson of Western India, and Gujarat came under me. And I went and saw the sufferings of the people. That touched me. And as I had said earlier, in a way, coping with death releases energy. You feel you've taken care of the worst thing in life, and what will happen? And of course, there could be a backlash. Government could come heavily on us. Many things could have happened. Fortunately, nothing very serious happened to me. I think being a woman and a widow helped me, perhaps. I don't know.
And do you think women are fundamentally different as leaders?
You know, I think more is made about differences. We are both human beings, males and females. And the way we are brought up, at least in India, the messages we receive do bring about some changes and differences. But fundamentally, I don't think we are different. For example, women are supposed to be soft and men tough. But in my case, my husband was the softy and I took the most unpleasant, tough decisions. So I think we have stereotypes and we are more alike than different.
Coming up, Anu discusses with Carla the need to have empathy and not pity for others and why she chose to go into politics. You're listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. If you've just joined us, this is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. BFM's Carla Sapsford-Newman caught up with businesswoman and philanthropist Anu Aga at the recent Leadership Energy Summit Asia. And in the second half of the interview, we find out why Anu has decided to enter politics in India and why it's important to laugh at our mistakes, among other things.
So Anu, you also talk about the need for having empathy for others, but not pity. So what's the difference for you, please?
Pity is when I feel sorry for you and I don't respect your ability to handle a tough situation and I feel sorry. But empathy is I know what you are going through. I'll be with you, but you have to go through it. I can't do it for you.
And does that guide your work with Teach for India?
In Teach for India, there's not much by way of pity because we are empowering so many students that it's changed their lives. For example, 4 children from the Akanksha school where Teach for India has their teachers have joined World College, 2 in India, 1 in Italy and 1 in Armenia. So it gives me hope that given an opportunity, any child can excel and do very well in life.
You also talk about how separation and failure are built into our lives. What can we learn from these necessary losses?
Whether we like it or not, we are going to be separated from our dear ones, either through death or divorce or some way. And these are inevitable. We run away from them. We hope that if I close my eye, I don't see the elephant in this room. But the elephant is there. If not today, sometime, I have to face them. And the quicker I come to terms with it by coping, not just coping, but drawing on my inner personal strength, the stronger and more happy I will be.
You also caution towards the end of your speech that one shouldn't be successful at work, but a failure in life. How do you define success?
As I said in my talk, to me, success is having an abundance in life, having adventure, joy, smiling, not having limited beliefs. For example, one of the beliefs which people have is that after a certain age, you can't make good friends. And I don't think that I've made wonderful friends in the last 10 years, young ones full of life who energize me. So living a full life, meaningful life, not being self-absorbed, at the same time, look after some of the things you want to do, a good balance, and having meaningful relationship with people I care for. For example, my family means a lot. I only have 1 daughter, 1 son-in-law, and 2 grandchildren. And I've been on 6 holidays with my grandchildren, just the 3 of us. That means a lot to me. Talking openly with my family and coming to joint decisions about how much to give, where to give. My daughter partners me in all my social work activities, which is wonderful. So this to me is being successful. I'm at peace within myself. Of course, there are times when I can't sleep, I'm tossing. But on the whole, ups and downs are less. I'm on a more even keel and I accept things with equanimity.
So what does keep you up at night these days?
I think old age, just sometimes old age, I think. Even I'm going to give a talk tomorrow, a little bit of anxiety. That could be, or one of my kids is not well, or I've had a disagreement with my daughter. I'm a human being. Anything that keeps anyone up keeps me up too.
It was interesting. You talked about as a custodian of the wealth you created, you plow a certain percentage of your profits into CSR and 30% of your own funds yearly to social causes?
Yes, that's correct. So in India, last year it became compulsory for corporates with certain profitability have to give. But way before it became compulsory, many companies in India like Tata's, Birla's, Bajaj and our company have given it. And after my son's death, we decided that 30% of our personal income will go towards social causes.
You've said that, quote, the business of business is to grow profit or it will die. But if this is its sole responsibility, then it will die.
It should die. I am a firm believer that the very narrow way of looking at business as top line and bottom line only, you need those. Without that, business cannot survive. And the years when we were not doing well, there was no corporate social responsibility. We were all turning inwards to make it profitable. But once you are profitable, it can't be only me and my shareholders. There's a whole community in which you operate, which needs to be looked at, and some cause in which our employees also have to be involved to make a life worthwhile and corporate life also meaningful.
You were nominated recently to be a member of parliament in India. You said during your talk recently that it was a mistake, a waste of time, and dysfunctional experience. Can you explain?
Yes. You know, to spend almost 5 months in a year in three sessions, I expected I could make some difference, but I find that ever since I joined, for some reason, when the current government was in opposition or now where they are in power, the disruption is the same. The reasons may be different, but it goes on and on. And I also realized, not belonging to a political party, the time given to me is very limited. So far, I have attended very regularly, even though I go in the morning and it's adjourned. And several times in a day that happens. I think we owe it to our people in India to be more responsible and have a more effective parliament.
And you also mentioned in your talk about the importance of a big sense of humor. How do you cultivate that?
I don't know. I've had a sense of humor for a long time. I think not to take yourself very seriously. Your achievements, your failures, whatever it is, laugh. Or even laugh at your mistakes. I find I laugh from my belly at some of the stupid things I've done. In the past, I used to be angry with myself. Now, I'm saying, join the human race, make your mistakes and laugh. So, and I read, I think it was Groucho Marx that said, that don't take life too seriously. You're never going to come out of it alive. So remembering these things helps me.
And what's your biggest piece of advice for your daughter or your grandchildren? Everything that you've been through, what have you learned?
Take life as it comes. Don't clutter it up with your expectations. Do your best. But whatever comes your way, learn to cope with it. And don't be self-absorbed with the wealth that we have, the privilege that we have. Do serve the people who are in need.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to BFM's Carla Sapsford Newman speaking with Anu Aga, Indian philanthropist and businesswoman, on Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.